Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of The Tap. I'm your host, author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. What do we got on tap for today, Andrew?
Today we got a lot of stuff to cover. We're kind of a day behind on our normal
reviews of things.
It was because of Labor Day, really.
Yeah, and a lot of wrestling as well.
Yeah, and a lot to cover when it comes to wrestling. We're not even going to go over everything in full detail like we normally would. We are going to cover just quickly Raw and SmackDown because, let's face it, no one really cares anymore, and they keep doing the exact same things over and over again. Meanwhile, we actually had AEW's All Out pay-per-view, which was explosive and literally making people remember what it's like to be a professional wrestling fan, not a fan of sports entertainment, not a fan of whatever BS that's going on in WWE these days. I'm talking about a legitimate pro wrestling fan.
I agree.
So before we can go in and get into the exciting things, because I don't want to go ahead and do and end the show on another buzzkill note. So we're going to start off with the buzzkill instead by going over SmackDown and Raw.
Yep, take out the trash.
So yeah, you can get it over. Exactly. So let's start with SmackDown. First off, you had Usos and Street Profits set up in a tag team match. This was actually a really good match. I was really happy, and it's something that I've been wanting to see for a while too. And I hated the ending because you had such a good match. And then you just have like the Usos intentionally get disqualified.
Yeah, you make it basically worthless. You just extend it out another week for no reason. Also, I hate that. I believe this match was also called a championship scramble again. And I cannot. What are the rules? Please explain them to me. Do they win and get a championship match, or do they win the championships? Because they change the rules on it every week depending on who's in the match. I don't know. It's annoying because this one was a championship match. But like, for example, there were many other ones like on Raw, like Nikki Cross had one before she won the title. And it was like not for the championship. It gave her a title match. Afterwards.
Yeah, it was a what the heck are they called? It's contender.
Yeah,
it's
it was like Nikki versus Ripley.
Yeah, no, I can't remember.
Championship contenders. Yeah, I kept saying championship scramble. Yeah, but it's a championship contenders match or something. I don't know, but it's the same thing, whatever the hell they're saying. It doesn't make sense. Like, why do you got to call it something? It's just a championship match, like, or it's a number one contenders match, but don't like what? No. Or it's a non-title match. Like, whatever happened to having a non-title match against your champion? Like, you know, I don't know, but the match was good. Yeah. It's a shame that it ended in DQ.
Yeah, I mean, it was the match itself. And I mean, even Montez Ford got like, we always talk about Montez Ford and him hitting that, like that frog splash, how much height he gets on that. But like the fact that he hits the frog splash, he does it where he's like twisting in the air, going the opposite way. It's always such like exciting. And then you have like a DQ finish. Like, you had, like, a momentum. You had a buildup. Like, it's one thing if, like, you're inside the ring and it's just like, hey, you know, like, you know you're about to lose the titles and you, like, start, like, getting in there.
That'd be a smart heel move. That would get you some heat.
Well, either A, coming in and with the title and hitting them with it, or B, you break up the pin and you keep on fighting and the referee does the five count and disqualifies you. Both of those situations are a little bit more acceptable. Or you break up the pin, everything spills out to the floor, and it's a double count out. You know, something like that would be a little bit more acceptable. Yeah. The way that they did this whole DQ finish was just complete bull.
I can't wait when we get on to AEW and talk about how good they are with their referees. God, yeah. Like the continuity and the making things make sense. Like comparatively to this, it's just it's like apples and oranges, completely different.
It really is. Then after we get through with that match, I want to just touch base on Becky Lynch and Bianca had a promo, and it's more of Becky Lynch just ducking Bianca. She's trying to, she's really trying to be a heel, but it's really not working, man.
Yeah, she's still getting cheered because people miss her. She left as a babyface. The first time she tried the turn heel, it didn't work either. Like, we forced her babyface because they tried turning her heel and it just wasn't happening. We were all happy that she won the first time. And to be honest, as much as people might be mad about the way that she won the title, come on, you'd rather have Becky Lynch as the champion right now. Let's be honest. So, you know, like, nothing against Bianca, but like, she had one of the flattest title runs in recent memory. And that's saying something for WWE.
It really was. I was just kind of like, eh. I'm like, yeah. I just don't really care.
I mean, it may have been a step above Rhea Ripley's, but that's not saying much.
No, not much at all. Rhea Ripley had a very flat version of her title run too.
Man. Yeah, yeah, just the raw version.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to kind of note, I don't really like to talk about people's appearances, but I kind of found Becky's attire interesting. It literally looked like something she pulled out of Lita's closet from like when Lita was like part of like the rated R superstar gimmick thing that she was doing with Edge.
Yeah. It did. It kind of had it reminds me of
what?
Penelope Ford, the way that she dresses
little bit.
To accompany Kip Sabian out to the ring. I know it was a little lacier than that. It was a little more back in the alley bedroom at the old motel kind of deal, but you know, it's definitely like lacy kind of stuff. But
well, yeah, I mean, the thing with Becky's outfit, and I'm not going to harp on it because I'm not commenting on it was too sexy or, you know, not sexy enough or man, that was hot or not, you know, I'm not going to comment on that at all.
My girlfriend listens to the show.
But the thing that for me with it was like, it was just, it was because it like threw me back to like Edge winning the title and like the way Lita dressed. And it was like, literally it was a leather zip top. Like it was kind of like almost like a vest, but then it had like these
like
belts.
Undergarments, like 1700s, but like leather black, you know, it looked like, what are they called? Like those things that like, you know, like girls in the Wild Wild West in the 1800s, like would wear where it's like tight around the waist. And it looks like it's something that you wear under corset. Your dress. Yeah. Corset. Yeah. That's it. That's what it looked like.
Well, it didn't really,
it was black leather. I just mean the way it like,
but they had like the belts that like attached from, it was like a belts that were attached from like the side of the vest down to her pants. And then from like her pants, it looked like the way that Lita held, like had like the thong sticking out type of thing back in the day, but it wasn't really like a thong. I was like, that's what was making me kind of like throw back to Lita on that one. Yeah. And I was like, dude, I'm like,
no, that
was
cool.
It looked badass. Like it wasn't like, it wasn't something that looked to be like over sexualized.
Yeah. And
it was like a powerful statement. That's the way I kind of looked at it. Cause it wasn't like the Becky Lynch of old. The Becky Lynch of old, like, even as the baby face was like, she would come out. Like, yeah. She'd come out in like the leather pants and like a t-shirt. Or like, you know, she would come out with like a leather jacket,
a yellow leather jacket though.
Right.
Like some weird,
but like this
like,
was
colored thing,
but this was like a pure, like badass moment where she just like walked out and was just like owned everything. Like she owned the ring. She owned the belt. She owned the fans because she had the fans eaten out of the palm of her hand. Like everything was just like, boom, like, perfect. And I was like, well, damn, like that was like an attention getter. And like I said, it wasn't something to be like a sexualized thing. It was just like a wow, like she just stole the show in her promo and the way she looked and like the way she presented herself all the way up until Bianca Belair came out.
Yep.
And then as soon as you had Bianca Belair come out, then you had Becky backpedal. And that's where I got concerned, because I know that they're doing this to try to make Becky turn heel or come off as a heel. But I'm like, all you're doing is making it look like she's scared of Bianca. And I'm like, that's not how you bring Becky Lynch in. Even as a heel, you don't make Becky Lynch back down from anybody. You don't sit there and be like, oh, you know what? Not now. I'm not going to wrestle you now. No. Like, Becky Lynch needs to be like, I'm not going to wrestle you now. And as soon as, like, and then goes to leave. And as soon as Bianca turns her back, you run back in the ring. You beat the heck out of her.
Yep.
That's how you go ahead and do a heel move. That's exactly how Becky Lynch needs to be done.
Yeah.
Because that would be still harnessing that power that she had from the moment she walked through those curtains out to the ring, the outfit, the fans, the initial statement, like her promo, everything that she had so much power. And you could sit there and be like, nah, I'm not wrestling you tonight. You go to walk out of the ring and be like, no, yeah, I'm going to attack you. I'm going to make you know that I'm the man. That's what needed to be done.
Yeah. I'm tired of talking about the SmackDown and Raw women's division. Even NXT's is getting on my nerves lately.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and jump to something a little bit slightly different now.
Yeah.
With Cesaro and Seth Rollins, they had a match. And Seth Rollins, he's stemming from last week, he's sitting there and still harping on the fact that Edge beat him. And he's like, I know what I need to do. He's like, I know what I did wrong. He's like,
I need to extend out this feud against Cesaro while Edge has his next limited date come up. And then yeah, I face him again at the next pay-per-view.
But here's the one thing that I want to go ahead and comment about when it comes to yeah, Edge and his limited dates thing, mm-hmm, is he's not doing the way that Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, he has more than a Brock Lesnar schedule, but like,
right, he only wrestles once every couple months, but he's there cutting the promos. He's helping to facilitate these storylines.
And yeah, continues to that.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like he's a part-timer when it comes to the wrestling, the in-ring wrestling.
Yeah.
But he's not really being a part-timer when it comes to being there and helping along the way.
Yeah, he cares. And he's a fan, so I appreciate that.
So, and then we have the actual match, Cesaro and Seth Rollins. And now Rollins is legit stealing Edge's moves. Like, I was just sitting there and I'm like, he hit the, what was it?
The Edge-O-Matic.
No, the Edge-O-Matic.
Educator, Edge-O-Matic, and Edge. There's a million of them. He's got an edge in front of all of his moves. Some of them the commentary doesn't even remember, and I'm like, nah, that's the Educator. I know what the name of that is. But yeah, he did at least three different signature edge moves.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely. And then even at the very end, when he attacked Cesaro with the chair and everything, and he used the bar to put Cesaro in the crossface the way that Edge has been doing.
Yep.
And then he went for the concerto.
Yeah, the concerto.
And then that's when Edge ran out.
Yeah.
So I like that the way that they're continuing this feud.
I think it's got some legs left still.
Yeah. I think so.
It's one of the more, if anything, interesting. It's one of the more interesting things that
I'm not gonna lie. When it comes, so here's the thing: SmackDown is very repetitive, but they're still doing a little bit more creatively than I see with Raw.
I agree.
I think that they need to fine tune what they're doing on SmackDown creatively. I think that they need to make, have additional matches on the card. that actually makes sense.
Yeah, they need to pull all those guys, all those guys that are sitting in catering every week out and have different matchups and not see, like, you know, this two tag teams fight each other every week, or the same singles guys have every stipulation in the book and have 15 matches and have 50-50 booking and nobody wins at the end of it.
Yeah, 50-50 booking doesn't do junk for us, man.
Yeah.
For the wrestling fans, it doesn't make sense. And case in point, look at Jericho and MJF when it comes to AEW. They legit had MJF go three up over Jericho. And before we actually go and jump into everything with AEW, but just a pure point. Young Bucks and Lucha Brothers, it's not 50-50 booking. Like, yep. they have these feuds and they go on and they come back to them. It's never 50-50 booking when it comes to AEW.
Yeah,
they may and have
the thing
one.
Is they have,
they may have one,
they
one
had
here
a
and there.
Yeah, they had a record. I'm sorry, of that they mentioned during that match of the Lucha Brothers and Young Bucks. That this is also what I love about AEW is that they act like, you know, the indies actually exist, unlike WWE. Mm-hmm. So they mentioned that since 2010, long before AEW was ever a thing, that they have had, you know, like 10 matches against each other, and the Lucha Brothers have won, well, it was 8 matches, but now it's 9 with that one. But the Lucha Brothers had won 5 and the Young Bucks had only won 3. So, you know, and that's even going back way into the indies, and they still didn't even 50-50 book them on different, you know, company shows. They were smart enough to be like, hey, you know, you guys are the more popular group right now, so you guys are going to get all the wins no matter where we go, and then vice versa when it's the other way around, you know. And I don't know, that's a lot more interesting to me than when you're like, oh, that guy's going to win and then that guy's going to win. So it really doesn't matter.
But the thing with, and a big difference between AEW and WWE is in AEW, even though we know that obviously the rankings can be padded, but your wins and losses matter. They wind up actually making it where it's like that you could see, okay, even talking independence in general, you're seeing what their record is against each other.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing with, like, if you look at baseball or, you know, football, it's like, what are your stats against this pitcher? What is your team stats against this team, because that's how you can kind of really get a good estimate and kind of predict things a little bit.
Exactly. And in any other sport, you're not going to be like, oh, you know, for example, you know, New York Giants and Patriots in the Super Bowl, and you're not going to be like, well, why are the Patriots there? It's not like they won every single game. You know, like, no, nobody ever will say that in a sport like that. Like, oh, they don't deserve to be there. No, they worked and they won and they have the record to prove that they're good enough to be there.
Right.
You know,
I mean, you could sit there and pull those kinds of stats when it comes to, like, okay, the New England Patriots had this record when it comes to their Super Bowl victories. But when it comes to facing the New York Giants in the Super Bowl, they have this record.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it really does. And, like, you can't dispute when they're like, oh, this is the number one contender for the title now, unlike WWE, where you're like, why the hell is that guy getting a title shot? Yeah. Instead, you're like, oh, this is why, because he has 13 wins and one loss. That's why.
I mean, look, you know? I mean, not for nothing, but, like, perfect example, Finn Balor. Finn Balor being in the Universal title picture.
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense. I mean, not for nothing. He's beaten, what, one or two people on SmackDown since he's actually returned?
And I don't think has ever spoken to Roman Reigns prior to that SmackDown return.
It was just like randomly, like, he just came out and was just like, I want a title shot. Yeah. Okay, you're going to get one.
Now blood feud for the next 3 months.
Exactly. So, I mean, it really goes to show you that 50-50 booking is the way WWE goes, but, like, logistically and trying to make sense and make things matter is what the focus is for AEW. And obviously this is why AEW is destroying everything when it, like, when it comes to like what WWE has built their fan base to be like, oh, this is the way you need to think. No, this is, that's not how you need to think. You need to think like a wrestling fan. Yeah. And think also logically. We don't suspend belief. You know, and I, like I said, I don't want to harp on this too much because, I mean, AEW really speaks for itself. And when we go into the pay-per-view in just a few minutes, it's really going to show you, like, the impact that one event for AEW had. And WWE literally followed it up. I want to just touch base really quick with the final part of SmackDown, and then we're going to touch base of how WWE puts Monday Night Raw on after the AEW pay-per-view and how horrible it was.
Which reportedly Vince McMahon was not even at, probably because he was crying somewhere.
Oh, man. He was getting dogged. He was trending on Twitter. Because of like how horrible everything was. And
yeah, like Vince McMahon's been doing this for 50 years and he can't do it this good.
Yeah, no, I mean, and the funniest thing was a meme that I saw of like Vince's reaction after watching AEW All Out. And it was just like, he needs him realizing he needs to re-sign Braun and Bray Wyatt. And it's just like, where is he? Get out of my way. I need him right now. Get him on the phone. I need to see.
Oh, God. And also, just quickly, reportedly, people higher ups in WWE, like Bruce Pritchard and such, are like, oh, no big deal. We didn't really want Adam Cole.
Meanwhile, Vince McMahon was sitting there like chomping at the bit to try to go and get everything done and like, you know, finalize to get a new contract out with Adam Cole, and personally met with Adam Cole that week of SummerSlam to try to get him to re-sign.
See, yeah, I exactly like, and they're like, oh, CM Punk. There was reportedly a quote from somebody in WWE that was, let them deal with that headache. And it's like, okay, maybe you guys are really the headache and, you know, he's just a normal guy that just couldn't take it anymore. I mean, it's already proven literally all the interviews, of all the people that have debuted recently or are debuting or have ever debuted for AEW say that they're like, wow, people actually thank you for coming. And they say hi to you backstage. And they don't look at you like you're about to be fired every time you botch a move. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, like, oh, they don't kick you off TV and put you in catering for 6 weeks. Ruby Soho said that she's never been chanted for before in WWE. Yeah. That's insane to me. Like how you could be in that company and lead a faction even for, you know, a few years and you know, nobody's ever cheered for you before. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into all that.
Yeah, I know. Let's
finish up SmackDown and then how horrible Raw was.
Yep.
For again, we had way too many Roman Reigns, Usos, and Paul Heyman segments.
But the main event was
Event is Roman Reigns versus Finn Balor for the title, and it was a good match. I mean,
yeah, it was deserving of main event. Like it especially was, out of the rest of the card. You know.
But you started off with Usos attacking Finn Balor. So it's like, okay, so Finn Balor is now going into the match injured, legit right before the bell rings.
So, yeah, well, so that we can move on.
And I was going to say, so it really discredited, like, you know, Finn Balor, like the match itself, knowing obviously Finn Balor is not winning the title. And obviously Roman Reigns is just going to pick the bones of what's left. Now, as you were trying to allude to, we'll fast forward through the actual match.
Yeah,
Roman Reigns chokes him out.
The important thing.
Yeah. Roman Reigns chokes him out using the guillotine. He leaves the ring, and as he's leaving the ring and he's walking back up the ramp, the red light hits the ring, and to make it now appear like we're going to have Demon Finn Balor coming soon.
There was also a heartbeat Apparently there's sound of a heartbeat, which is supposed to be like the demon coming back, which the Demon King, which is gonna be great. It's gonna be fun. They haven't brought him back in a while. It's kind of the only thing I really cared about on SmackDown this week, outside of, you know, very, very minor other things. It's the only thing I'm looking forward to come, you know, that's coming up, is that the demon's going to return.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, SmackDown is definitely a little bit better when it comes to the creative process than
Raw. Yeah, for sure.
But they need to just fine tune things. Moving into Raw. Now, this is the Monday Night Raw right after AEW just put a historic
pay-per-view on, like, one of the best pay-per-views. Like,
that's why I said historic, because that's the way I kind of look at this. This was like the show that tops every single pay-per-view from almost the last 25 years.
This is the first time since we've been doing this podcast that I didn't fast forward through a single thing for a show.
Well, like, I did when it came to Paul White versus
I'm not going to lie, but that was only 2.5 minutes anyway. So I needed a breather in between the main event and CM Punk, Darby Allin.
Yeah. So Monday Night Raw, I'm literally just going to go through this really quick. You open up with a tag team turmoil promo. So all the teams that were involved in the promo and in the tag team turmoil all cut like a less than minute promo, like maybe 30 seconds, and they move on to the next team. They recap the tag team title match from last week, then go into an RK Bro promo that which brings out Lashley and MVP. They book Orton versus Lashley for the WWE title at Extreme Rules. And then Lashley and MVP get their way to put themselves into the tag team turmoil match, obviously into the last spot. Then you have the tag team turmoil match, which ends abruptly because Mason T-Bar, after they get eliminated, take out the New Day and Mansoor and Ali, which then WWE officials are like, oh, let's just stop the whole match and we'll continue it as your main event for the rest of the night.
I hate when they do that. I hate when they start off the night with like, 10 to 20 minute promo segment. Then you get a match that goes on for, 10, 15 minutes. And then they don't even complete the match. And then they're like, yeah, this is going to be our main event, because we never had anything else going on the entire time. Like, what was your main event supposed to be in reality? I just want to know. Like when you advertise this show for people that bought the tickets, this is the thing that like upsets me. This is why I'll never buy another ticket to a WWE show, because they do this. Like, they ruin it. They give you expectations of something and then they strip them away to the bare minimum, and then they still even.
I have no desire whatsoever to ever go to another Monday Night Raw or SmackDown at all ever again. Yeah. I mean, honestly, and it was actually kind of funny because I was talking up about AEW about what happened this weekend, and one of my buddies turns around and messages me. He's like, so I'm assuming you're going to the New York show. And I'm like, dude, I wish. I'm like, if I was there, I would probably be wanting to go. But I moved to Georgia 2 years ago. I'm like, there's no show here right now. So yeah. I'm like, I'm SOL. But I'm like, had I been single and, no kids and stuff like that right now, and I was still in New York, I'd be there in a heartbeat, man.
Hell yeah. I didn't choose that show because when I bought my tickets for next week's Dynamite, not this week, the following one, when I bought the tickets for that, they didn't even have the Yonkers show up yet, or whatever it is, or the Queen show up yet, the Flushing Queen show up. They didn't even have that one up yet. Yep. So I wasn't able to buy tickets to that. And I'm glad that, because they're now having COVID restrictions in New York, that Daniel Bryan has already debuted, because I was getting really mad that Daniel Bryan was going to debut the week after I went, but now I'm happy. I'm going to get to see Adam Cole. I'm going to get to see Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson.
Actually. Bryan Danielson. You got to get it right now.
I know. Hey, it's all right. Either way, it's still his name. but I bet Brie Bella still has to call him Daniel Bryan.
Well, no, she always called him Brian.
No, I know. I'm just saying. Yeah, on WWE
we'll get into all that stuff in just a bit, but just to kind of let's finish up Monday Night Raw because we want to talk about AEW.
Yeah, exactly.
You had Sheamus getting the win over Drew McIntyre with rolling him up and hooking the tights, and then McIntyre smacked Sheamus with his own face guard. Another thing that I know you hated. So they had a Rhea Ripley, Nikki promo. Nikki and Rhea come out to the ring for their tag team match against Natalya and Tamina. And when they came back from break, they cut right into a Charlotte Flair recap and then promo. And then they go into the actual match with Rhea Ripley, Nikki Cross getting the win over Natalya and Tamina.
Yeah, and guys, we didn't even pre-talk about this. He just knew that I hated.
Oh
this.
God,
he's
yeah,
completely
no, I,
right.
I saw that when I was watching Raw back this morning, and I'm like, oh man, I'm like, Justin's gonna hate that one.
Yeah, I get that with you sometimes when I see certain things like the thing with Carmella and Liv Morgan, where there was just a non-making sense promo where Liv Morgan
was
like
on SmackDown
in the background.
Yeah.
I knew you hated that. I was like, I hated it.
I was just like, what the? I'm like, what in the? Or are they thinking?
So,
good.
So I mean, the match. I was just gonna say, like, the match was a match.
Yeah, I wasn't. I'm not even touching.
Yeah. Let's go. I want
to
go.
The only match that I really wanted to finish up was first off Charlotte Flair versus Nia Jax for the women's title.
That's what I was going to say.
Because they tried to make it look like it was a work shoot match. Like they tried to make it look
like it was a real fight, like last week, exactly.
Like they really were trying to amp it up to make it look like that, but you kept on having Shayna kind of getting involved too. So it made it really look like this was, it was like horribly just.
It was obviously done, work, yeah. You know, like this gave me flashbacks of the Nia Jax, my whole stuff when she did it organically the first time. And then they made her do it for the next like 2 weeks in a row, you know, like that. And it was not organic whatsoever. That's kind of how this made me feel, where it's like, you're just insulting our intelligence at this point. Like, we know that they actually fought, like you could put them in an actual match, but don't try and make it like they're actually fighting again when we really saw what it looked like when they were fighting last week. You know, and I mean, they're in a match anyway, and you're already like ruining it by saying
it was a horrible match. It was a horrible match to begin with. Let's just be honest. Yeah. And the only things that were actually like interesting about it was, first off, Shayna Baszler costing Nia Jax the win and the title, which obviously it's done to split them up, which now you're splitting up another tag team in your women's division. Which
I feel like
stupid.
They've already been split up for like a month.
They really have. But,
I know, but that's just the thing, is they keep doing these things every week. Like they're still like, I don't understand. I figured like, the week after they broke away from Reggie that they were done basically, because then Shayna lost like another match or something because of Nia, and then they like turned on each other. I thought like, but whatever. It's gonna culminate in something eventually. They're gonna have a match, I'm sure.
The only other thing that was then interesting was Alexa Bliss then pops up at the end to like kind of put this whole now like them going to wrestle at
that Extreme I'm excited
Rules.
For it. She, yeah. Everybody popped big for her pointing at Charlotte's title, which, you know, I'm actually excited for, because Alexa Bliss is like my favorite part of the Raw women's division right now. And Charlotte Flair is a close second for me, because she's the only person who's generally consistent. I mean, sometimes, you know, she's booked into a corner and there's nothing she can do, but I mean, like, She generally tries to make the best of everything that she gets, I think. And same thing with Alexa Bliss, which is why I'm actually excited to see what happens with the Raw Women's Championship now. And I think it will culminate in another short reign for Charlotte and Alexa Bliss probably getting the title.
Pretty much. But yep. We'll see what happens with it. I mean, it may end up being where it's something that's dragged out for a couple months.
Yeah, probably.
And then finally, you actually do have the conclusion of the tag team turmoil match as your main event, with Bobby Lashley getting the win. Oh, the thing that I actually like was Omos and Bobby Lashley kind of going toe-to-toe. And yeah. Omos puts Lashley down, and then you have Orton come in and RKO him to end the show.
Yeah, and was Orton wearing shorts?
Yes.
Yeah, because I noticed there's this thing Orton says in almost every interview he's in for years. He hates wearing the trunks. He hates wearing like the
wouldn't speedo. You, man?
Yes, but he hates it so much. And he said, like, sometimes other people don't care. Like they don't care about other people. They're like, yeah, you can change your outfit, no problem. But they made Randy Orton wear these for years. He's been trying to get out of wearing them. And finally, because it's great because he's in a tag team. Riddle, no, but he might actually try and transition to these shorts because Riddle is an MMA style guy, and they're like MMA like type basketball short type things. So it may be possible this way for Randy to finally transition out of those god awful things, which I wouldn't want to wear either. I feel for him on that. That's just the one thing I wanted to say about that. But
no worries. All right, so let's jump into what we really want to talk about, which is AEW All Out. My goodness. I mean, this was a great show from top to bottom. Kicking off the show, unexpectedly, mind you, because I really didn't expect this, Miro defended the TNT title successfully against Eddie Kingston. I did not think that this was going to be. Yeah, I thought this would be a little bit later in the show. I didn't think it was going to be the opener.
It was a great opener, though. I'm not going to lie. It fit after all the other like surprises and stuff they had. I think it made sense to put it here because the crowd was going to be over for it in the beginning. Kingston's very over. Everybody loves Miro's gimmick as the heel in the situation, and I popped huge that this was the first match. I was like, oh, starting off with this already. This is one of the ones I was most excited for.
So here was one of the things that I also found funny was the promo. First off, going into it all, the promo on Rampage. And I don't remember the exact words, but
redeem these nuts.
Yeah. Well, so it ended with Eddie Kingston saying redeem these nuts. And
he had a shirt too when he came out.
He had the shirt that said redeem these nuts.
I want to buy that. I swear if it's at the AEW show that I'm at, I'm going to buy it.
But then this thing continues on Twitter. So you have Miro on Twitter sits there and goes, consider these nuts redeemed.
Yeah, I love that.
And then you had Miro's wife, Lana, or CJ, go and wind up making a comment in there saying that she was going to take care of his when he got home. I'm like, oh, my goodness. I'm like, tell me this is not really happening.
Dude, this is leading in to the – because it only makes sense. I mean, it's kayfabe, but it's not because they're married. Let's be honest. Yeah. It probably happened at some point. But,
it was just priceless, man. It was great.
And it's great, too, because it makes me think, because this is part of Miro's whole character where he has this hot wife that he goes back to after he, you know, gives an offering to God for his championship. Like it's going to be great because I think somebody was holding a sign in the crowd, too, during this match that said, we want AJ and Punk and CJ and Miro, which I agree. I'd be happy with that. I feel like AJ left at the top of her game as well. But
CM Punk has already sat there and said she's not going to come back.
She's way beyond wrestling at this point, you know, even though she obviously could if she ever wanted to. But I mean, you know, whatever, her decision's her decision. But CJ is definitely coming. I definitely think.
We know CJ is going to be coming.
Yeah. Soon too, I think. I think it's going to be
her 90 days are up.
Yeah. So who knows? It may even be this Dynamite or Rampage even.
I don't know necessarily if they're going to go that soon just because of everyone else's debuts that they've had this week.
Well, hey, man, I mean, nobody really thought that they were going to debut everybody in the book.
I did.
That was speculated to debut. Yeah,
I did. You're nuts. I called it.
And you're nuts. Nobody else said that. Also, I did tell you that Adam Cole, you even got the, I'm so mad at you, because I thought that he really should have debuted during the Bucks match, because I didn't think the Bucks were actually going to lose.
I didn't think that they were either. I think that's one of the few predictions that I got wrong, was that I predicted that the Bucks were going to win.
Because this match, I feel like, I feel like the whole feud was actually Jurassic Express versus the Young Bucks, and then all of a sudden the Lucha Brothers won the finals of the 2-week tournament, and they were just all of a sudden, I mean, yeah, they were really over in the match, but I was like, yeah, there's not really like anything that they built here. This was like a quick like thing that started with the Lucha Bros a week before the show. And then that's why I really didn't expect it at all. But apparently, after looking online, like afterwards, apparently tons of people thought that Lucha Bros were going to win. And I was like, well,
I saw it up that weekend. I saw a lot of people predicting that Lucha Bros were going to win. And I'm like, well, I'm like, that's news to me. But I'm like, whatever. I'm still going with my prediction, because I'm like, I figured Young Bucks are going to take the titles, you know, like keep the titles, because I wholeheartedly believed Adam Cole was coming back and he was joining the Elite.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that would make perfect sense.
I thought it would have been great if, because he was dead, which they did reference right before he eventually debuted. But,
you like that one too, right?
Yeah. Also, this week's BTE says back from the dead, and it's so funny. It's a really funny thing. Only the beginning part of BTE is funny, but it's very funny. They have a seance where Kenny Omega's like, he's like, listen, he's like, guys, he's like, I got this. He's like, we're going to do a seance. He's like, we got to bring back one of our old friends. And the Bucks are like, oh no. And then Matt Jackson's like, oh, I know who he's talking about. And he's like, all right, yeah, yeah, this might make sense. And he's like, yeah, guys. He's like, trust me, I talked to Malachi Black. He said, this is going to work. that was super funny. He's like, yeah, it's black magic. And then it doesn't work. And it's so funny because the Bucks are like, you suck. And then they even shoot on him. They're like, shoot name Tyson, you actually suck. And then they walk away. And then everybody gets up and they're like, hey, man. You know, they all walk away. And then Adam Cole just appears like back on like in front of where they were doing the seance. And he goes, hey, he's like, Super Dragon, where are you? Because that's where he last got killed off on BTE. And then he's like, why does my mouth taste like Monster? Because that's the last thing he drank. He drinks Monster when he gets super kicked in the face. I just thought it was really funny. They had their attention to detail on even their YouTube show for him. But
they are so spot on with so much stuff that it's not even funny. And it's just like, who would have thought that two young punks that I believed to be just nothing but ripoffs of the Hardy Boys when they debuted in TNA.
Generation Me, I hated them. I shoot hated them as people.
I hated that, like the gimmick. I'm like, they're just not Hardy Boy ripoffs. And who would have thought that, like, those two freaking punks, man, would be helping to change the entire industry? Who would have thought they would be considered the greatest tag team of all time?
Their book should be called Saving the Business.
Yeah.
Like, not killing it.
All right. We're getting way too off.
All right. But anyway, yeah. So great opening TNT title match. Kingston had some really good, this is one of the things with the referee attentions to detail, how the match eventually ends, because there's a couple of points here where I thought Kingston hits him with a DDT, but the ref takes way too long to get back Bryce Remsburg. But attention to detail, at some point Miro accidentally rips off the turnbuckle pad in one of the corners, and at one point towards the end Kingston's like, all right, I'm gonna throw him into it, and Bryce Remsburg, you know, trying to stop the illegal thing because he knows that the turnbuckle pad's already off, he steps in front of him to stop him from doing it, and he's trying to talk to Kingston, and very like you know, it was done very well, because sometimes they do these like under the referee's leg, like low blows. And it's like, dude, the referee definitely saw that or even felt that, because you half kicked him in the balls too. So, you know, but this one was a good one where I thought that their attention to detail in this, and it made sense. And also it was the perfect sort of ender to the match, because, you know, like you said, the whole promo was Kingston redeem these nuts, consider them redeemed.
Yep.
You know, so that this is fantastic. I do not have a complaint about this match. That this was like easily a Dynamite main event, and they'd open the show, and I couldn't be happier with this opener.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was the match that really just to get the crowd started. And
it set the bar. It put everybody on notice for what they really did the rest of the night.
Next match, we had John Moxley getting the win over Kojima,
which wasn't,
it was an okay match.
Yeah.
It wasn't my cup of tea of a match. But then we have at the end of it, you had Minoru Suzuki coming out and then him attacking Moxley.
Yeah, which was really cool to watch them, because Suzuki doesn't pull punches. I saw Moxley a couple of times pulling punches on him, but after the first two that Suzuki gave him, he started actually clapping him in the face, which I thought was awesome. You know, so they hit each other back and forth really hard. Everybody sings Suzuki's song. If you don't know Suzuki, he's a very, very famous New Japan wrestler. He is known for being one of the craziest, hardest hitting guys. And he's like 50 years old too. And he still goes like he's 35. And I'm actually, this is the first time I've really been excited for John Moxley to face one of these New Japan guys. Yeah. So I'm very happy for that. And he hits him with the Gotch Pile Driver, which was cool to see as well.
Yeah. There's not really much else to say. I mean, it was just, it's something where I'm going to be looking forward to seeing it.
It's
I'm not
one
really
of many
big into it,
debuts
but
on the show though. So to be fair, this was, you know, the least, you know, popular debut on the show, or at least mentioned, if anything, you know.
Your next match was Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, defending the women's championship successfully against Chris Statlander.
This was an okay match.
It was an okay match. I like that how it kind of got towards the end, where Britt is on the outside. She, you know, gets Statlander down. She hits the curb stomp on the outside to really kind of mess with Statlander, and then being able to really just kind of easily put the lockjaw on at that point. I thought that was great because it wasn't really needing, you know, Jamie Hayter and Rebel to like cause her to win.
Also, in no way, shape, or form did anybody think that Chris Statlander was beating Britt Baker. But she did surprise me in the way that, I mean, a little bit. I know she's a good wrestler, you know, but like it was a very good match. I was very impressed with her, and I feel like it bumped her stock up a little bit. So you can't complain with that. And of course, the Pittsburgh Sunrise was pretty cool as well, you know, which is Adam Cole's Panama Sunrise from NXT. But she hits it and they call it the Pittsburgh Sunrise, which I thought was pretty cool. And yeah, it was
a good match. It was a good match. I mean,
it was better than the previous. It was better than Kojima Moxley for sure. 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Then we get into probably it's hard to say if this or Omega was the match of the night, but Young Bucks defending the tag team titles against the Lucha Brothers inside of a cage match. Lucha Brothers taking the titles, becoming the new champions.
All right, let me stop you right there. I watched I went back and watched the full Omega Christian match, like, because while I had it on, I got up to get something to eat, you know, I missed a couple parts of it, and then I saw the highlights at the end of the match, and then I had heard that people, at least the crowd, I mean, they were obviously probably dead by this point because of everything else, but like that they were kind of bored for this match, For the Omega match.
For the Omega match?
Yeah, like a lot of people seemed like, I feel like because of the crowd, it kind of took me out of it a little bit because they were like exhausted.
Yeah, I guess.
Stuff they were seeing, you know. I mean, it was good. No, I didn't think it was bad. It's just I saw some people saying that it was a total snore fest, which I don't think it was. I just don't think it was as good as the Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks. Even though that this was a cage match and the other one was closer, I mean, they still had some, you know, weapon spots and stuff, but I mean, it was closer to a actual pure wrestling match. But this Lucha Brothers Bucks match was nonstop,
yeah, tornado tag
action. Double package pile drivers from the older brothers to the younger brothers, the Hurricane Rana, where Nick Jackson and Phoenix both step up to the top rope. Damn. Phoenix is so fast, and we expect Phoenix to be really fast, but some of the stuff Nick Jackson was doing, because Phoenix would climb up at like a normal pace up to something, and Nick Jackson would just leap up like 5 feet and catch him. Like it was really, really sick. I'll let you talk about anything you want to talk about the match. And if you don't mention this one part, I will mention it after you do.
Well, first off, I think that Matt Jackson was definitely a sick individual with getting his hands on the loaded shoe with the thumbtacks on the bottom of it.
Can really briefly take 5 seconds. Can we just give Brandon Cutler a round of applause for that throw? Because I think he was meant to botch it. They figured he was gonna. Because this is like one of the tallest cages. This is taller than the average WWE cage. I also like that it was spaced farther apart, so you actually could like go on the side of the ring, you know.
It was, because at one point you had Penta actually get sandwiched between the ring and the cage.
Because a lot of Phoenix's and Nick Jackson's moves involve them going outside the ring. And also I like this too, because also in cage matches you have the you know, like when you even go off to do an Irish whip off the rope, it's like your back hits the fence and you don't get like the full, you know, rubber band effect off of it. You know, like I feel like WWE has it like right up to the poles.
They really do. Yeah. You're right up on it.
Yeah. Like you can't fall beneath the ring. Like they've done it like in like matches 20 years ago when they were still figuring out their whole cage setup. But like, you know, yeah, for forever now, it's been like you can't step on the floor even if you try. Brandon Cutler with that throw, I think it would have been funny if he would have messed it up and they would have yelled at him, because I think that's what was supposed to happen. But then when he threw it almost so perfectly to Matt Jackson that Matt Jackson nearly actually caught it. And then you actually see Nick Jackson give him the thumbs up and go, "That was good, Brandon. That was good."
Yeah.
Nobody thought that he was going to do it. Even the crowd was like, "Yay." But that shoe, man, this shoe,
that was sick.
I've never seen anything like it.
And then he licked the friggin' the tacks, yeah, too, man. Oh,
dude, and those were real tacks, because you could see like at the end of the match, they like show the shoe and there's tacks on it that are bent. Also, I saw a thing where on BTE they show like the setup to All Out and the prepping, and they show like the guy putting the tacks on all the shoes. All the tacks on the shoe, and it's just that is incredible. And I think that wasn't even meant to happen. Penta actually ran into his face, and I think he was supposed to like, I've ran into the shoe, and I think he was with his face, and he was supposed to like not actually get his face stuck in by thumbtacks that much, but he rammed into it.
It was
and bad. Really got stuck.
He was bleeding bad, man.
Yeah, and his kids were there, man, too. They were crying and stuff, you know, because he was bleeding so bad at the end of the match, you know, and whatever. But there was this sick spot of they did a lot with the shoe. They did a lot with this tacked shoe, even to where like Phoenix picked it up and hit Matt and Nick Jackson in the face with it a bunch.
Yeah, but he kind of missed in actually like coming close to it.
Yeah, because he actually got hit with the tacks once. And he was like, "I don't want to do that to you.
If I got hit for real, I'd be like, I'm hitting you with it."
Nah, hey, man, but hey, Phoenix is a nice guy, but Phoenix, he's too nice for his own good. So he goes to the top of the cage, because Penta's like, he looks at him and he points to him and he goes, you you do the cage, you know, and he's like, me. And he's like, yeah, you. He's like, who else is going to do it? You know, so he goes up to the top and you think, you know, I mean, everybody knew he was going to jump, but like,
yeah,
you know,
well, that was the possibility.
There's a possibility that maybe he was going to not, you know, and maybe just go over the cage. And Nick Jackson jumps up, like leaps halfway up the cage. Like he jumps straight to the top rope and then leaps up on the cage. He hits him back off. And then, oh my God, I've never seen it. This was bigger than that, like Ricochet 630, like at the War Games. Like this was... like he got air elevation. Like he did a Montez Ford off the top rope, but like off the cage.
Yeah. I mean, he had super air on that one, came down with a high cross body.
Yeah.
And then instantly they set it straight up for their tag finisher.
God, he must have had butterflies. I can only imagine.
I couldn't imagine
going down then, that. Like, oh
yeah. And then you had, as soon as they finished hitting the tag team finisher, Ray ran right over to make sure that I think it was Matt Jackson, or maybe his neck. I can never when it's not kind of like heat of the moment, I can't tell which one was which. But yeah, one of them was
not even
it,
with that.
I think it might have been
god awful beard.
No, I think it was Matt. Well, I was watching it off of YouTube, so a lot of my
the fixation
was like distorted from it all. But Ray had stopped the other Jackson brother from being able to break up the pin and held him there. So the Lucha Brothers got the win by far.
I think Nick took the pin. Matt took the pin.
Okay. Well, like I said, the pixelation was off, so I couldn't really tell which one was which, but incredible match. And I look forward to seeing the Lucha Brothers tag team title reign.
Now this was a thing I actually just remembered because you were saying you couldn't tell them apart, was that during the entrance, you know how the Bucks dress as crappily as possible and wear the weirdest things. They wear really nice shoes, but their entire rest of their outfit is like terrible.
Tacky.
On purpose.
Not really terrible, just tacky.
Yes, but to me, that's the same thing. Wearing a Hawaiian shirt is both terrible and tacky. Unless
you're Gabriel Iglesias.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that fits. If he wore anything else, I would be like, no.
Shout out to Gabriel, man, because he's an awesome dude.
yeah. And he loves wrestling, too, by the way.
He does.
Nick Jackson actually grew out his hair like a Grizzly Adams-type beard, and then he only did his handlebar mustache, like even threw his beard all the way down. He did he bleached it like Hulk Hogan. Like NWO Hulk Hogan, and literally when he comes out, Tony Schiavone, this made me laugh. Tony Schiavone was like, "And do you see that beard? Jesus." He was like, "Oh my God, can you believe?" He's like, "Can we just talk for a minute? Can we just have a moment of silence for Nick Jackson's facial hair? Because it's terrible."
All right, man. Let's move on because we got more show to go through and not a whole lot of time.
Yep.
Casino Battle Royal was okay. It wasn't really that great.
It really showed how lacking their women's division is, though. Like, not that the women are not good wrestlers. It's just
they're good wrestlers, green, but there's a lot of botches.
They're very green. Also, a lot of them. They're very young and green. Also, they're not treated like stars. There's like even like the bunny, you know, Cherry Bomb, who's been wrestling for over 16 years, you know, is treated like, you know, she was Impact Women's Champion, and she's treated like she's like just part of the bottom barrel of like the Hardy family office, you know, and feels so unimportant, you know. Like,
I wouldn't go that route, but I mean, she's the thing for her is that they haven't
She was one of the most important people in this match. That's what I'm saying. That's what I think of her watching AEW, and she was one of the most important people in this match.
I think it was more important because of the fact that you had her and Penelope Ford this last week ganging up on
also the first suit in the match, and she also made it down to like the final four or five people in the match. So,
but, What I I mean, obviously, I'm not going to go into this one that much.
Yeah, you don't have to. Really, that was all I wanted to say is that it's really showing their hand on their women's division. Yeah.
I was going to say for this one, though, is we had the surprise entrant being for the wild card being Ruby Soho, who we all knew as Ruby Riott from WWE, come out to a huge pop from, I guess, from what my understanding is that she's actually from the Chicago area.
She grew up wrestling there, at least. I think she actually is from New York, but she wrestled in the Chicago area when she started. That's where she wrestled for for her majority of her indies before she went to WWE.
Yeah, but she came out to a huge pop. I liked that the final two came down to her and Thunder Rosa.
Yeah,
because Thunder Rosa is vicious with those chops, man. I was cringing every time Thunder Rosa threw the chop, and when I saw Ruby throw the chop in return, I'm like, man, that had no impact whatsoever.
Those people like Thunder Rosa and Eddie Kingston,
they're vicious.
And they're smart too. They both wear even Thunder Rosa's gear actually covers the top of her chest. So actually, if you think about it, have you ever slapped leather? Your hand hurts. Yeah, yeah. So not only does she hit you with the hard chop, you actually hurt yourself chopping her.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which I think is great. And they really were going at it hard. And Thunder Rosa was the only person besides Ruby Soho that I really felt like could have or should have won this match.
That was the thing. My prediction had been Thunder Rosa, but I had completely forgotten about Ruby Soho even being a possibility. Yeah. To be involved in it as the wild card, because I completely forgot about the wild card.
Yeah.
And not even thinking of possibilities for a wild card. I was just banking it off of the people that I knew were in the match, and I'm like the only logical person would have been Thunder Rosa. And I'm like,
exactly,
now that I saw that Ruby Riott or Ruby Soho was the one who was the wild card, I was like, oh man, I'm like, I completely forgot and discounted all the women wrestlers that had been released from WWE whose 90-day compete clauses were up.
Yep.
And I'm like, I didn't even think twice about it.
Yeah, but
I was kicking myself on that one, because I'm like, it would have been those two as my pick.
Yeah.
Probably would have gone Thunder Rosa, but.
But that was the best part of the match, was the ending sequence and everything, last 5 minutes of the Battle Royal. The rest of it was, we talked about it. So Ruby Soho wins. She gets a number one contendership eventually somewhere. I wasn't paying attention to where.
They didn't say when. They just said that she's the next contender for the title.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ruby Soho, because now I have that Rancid song stuck in my head. And I knew that song. Yeah, it's by Rancid. Ruby Soho.
Yeah.
It's been stuck in my head ever since.
Because I knew the guitar riff in the song, and I was like, wow, that sounds really familiar.
I grew up on that song.
Yeah. So Ruby Soho hopefully is a little jump start to our women's division here, hopefully.
Let's hope. Moving along. Yep, we're gonna go right into it. Jericho puts his career on the line against MJF. Jericho comes out. You don't actually even hear really the rest of the song. You just hear his guitarist came out.
And played
Judas on the guitar.
Threw a guitar riff. He actually didn't even play the notes to Judas. He actually played the parts that people are supposed to sing.
Yeah,
He played the
vocals. He played the actual song, but
yeah, but it sounds like the vocals on guitar really is what it sounded like, because you couldn't hear the crowd chanting also, because they were so mesmerized that he was he was live playing it on guitar. I saw people also there were people that were on different parts. Like they closed up on somebody who sung the wrong part, like while it was going on, you know, which is funny, but yeah.
But Jericho it was a good match. I feel like that their other matches were definitely much better.
Yeah.
But it was still a really good match for the card itself. Jericho getting the win, and he gets MJF the win with the selling. Lion with the Lion Tamer.
Yeah,
I'm not calling MJF it the Walls of Jericho. It's the Lion Tamer.
Well, yeah, if he puts your knee in the back, it's the
well, Lion he tried Tamer. To, and then he screwed it
yeah.
up.
But. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, whatever. Yeah, but MJF did really good selling in this match of his back, really playing up. Like, even after he hit his own move, he, like, got up and, you know, was holding his back.
MJF is going to be a huge star.
He's ahead soon. Of his time. He in my opinion, he already has been in my eyes for a while. It's just they
no, but I'm really saying like he's gonna be champion.
Burning him hard. Yeah, I know they've been slow burning him hard. He's gonna have a lengthy reign too when he does become champion.
Yeah, I predict within the next year he's gonna take over as a dominant heel champion. I mean, honestly, I still feel Adam Page will end up being the one to dethrone Kenny Omega.
I feel like he'll dethrone Adam Page.
Exactly. That's what I feel like.
Yep. I completely agree. And I'm sure AEW has already thought of this and that's already where they're going. Dude, eventually.
I don't want to get off topic, but I got to say this. I feel like AEW has like so much planned in the like for future in terms of the storyline that like they are like an entire year ahead already. And it's just a matter of making sure. No, I think it's honestly more of them making sure everyone stays healthy.
Yeah.
Enough for them to make these plans go through.
And I feel like they have contingency plans anyway and stuff.
Tony Khan even said it. He commented about Adam Page actually taking the time off. And he goes, we were blessed that we had a lot of other pieces that were able to fall into play. He goes, but we had contingencies set up regardless. So even if we didn't have all these people coming in, he said, we still could have made it happen for contingency plans. But because of all these additional people that were coming in, he goes, we had even more so.
I feel like this is actually the perfect time that Adam Page could have took time off because of all these new top contenders are coming in. It's a good time to actually give that feud a breather, because I was wondering where they were going now that they had to wait on Adam Page. But like now that they have all these other, they have Daniel Bryan, you know, and just even Adam Cole being added to the Elite just adds an entire like fresh perspective on the entire group. Absolutely. Like it's awesome.
I'm
sorry. I kind of got ahead.
No. It's okay. We only have about 8 minutes left, so I just want to jump ahead a little bit. CM Punk, Darby Allin. I want to give them just like a brief moment of credit because they put on a heck of a match. And to be completely honest with you, it was very it was comparable. I saw a lot of people comparing it to one of the earliest Monday Night Raw matches.
1-2-3 Bret Hart Kid.
1-2-3 Kid. Yep.
Yep. I saw that as well, where literally they were spot for spot. Apparently somebody said the opening sequence of the match was legitimately
with spot the tie-ups. For spot,
even down to the facial expression, which I'm glad to hear, which I
saw the side by side.
Because I was going to tell anybody that said that CM Punk still has it, that this was a rest hold snore fest. Because it was rest hold after rest hold after rest hold. He did a move off the ropes and then back into a choke.
I like the match.
I thought he was okay. Like, I didn't think that like he botched anything or that he was just obviously slower paced. He's older now. You know, he still did his typical CM Punk spots, which I popped for.
The ending was great though.
No, it was never meant to, and it was never meant to be match of the night. Let's be honest. It's a tune-up match for CM Punk. It's his welcome back match. It's his reintroduction. No one was expecting it to be the match of the night. And I'm not saying I disliked it. I didn't dislike it at all. It's just, it was a little too old school-y Bret Hardy for me. And you know how I feel about Bret Hardy,
which is
probably why I didn't like this match that much, because it just felt like I was watching Triple H and Batista have a 30-minute snore fest where they put each other in rest holds back to back to back to back to back. It's like, yo, you can call more than one move in the rest hold, guys. Let's do a whole match sequence before we.
Yeah, well, I mean, I also understand first off that they were paying the homage to Bret Hart.
Yeah, 1-2-3 that's kid. Why. But that's why I think forgive
it's.
It.
I think it's also it. That they were it was to give CM Punk the ring generalship to be able to control the match, and him not having called a match in the ring like that in quite some time. I think
and
it was
Darby
the way
still gets to put over. Darby still gets the rub, and even the Sting coming out at the end makes me think there's a possibility of a Sting CM Punk match, which
you never know.
Even Sting in his older age, I would still like to see, like, because Sting doesn't seem that bad. Like, Sting's been wrestling like that. That's how he wrestled 10 years ago, is the same way he's wrestling now. So in my opinion, he's fine. He might be slightly slower, but who isn't once they get over 50, man? Come on.
All right, let's
I know, sorry,
keep going. Paul White gets the win over QT Marshall. I'm not even going to go into this match.
That's all I was going to say. Yeah. Move on. It was 2.5.
Finally,
minutes.
Yeah. And our final match, we had Kenny Omega versus Christian for the AEW Championship. It was a solid match. I definitely put it as one of the top of the night.
Yeah, I enjoyed it more than other people. Like I was telling you, I enjoyed it much more.
Yeah, I enjoyed the match. It was a hard choice between that and the tag team title match as my match of the night. But I think part of what stole it a little bit more was the ending, having Kenny Omega come out there and flat out, you know, saying like no one, the only people that could possibly beat him.
Don't work here. They're retired or they're dead.
Yeah. And then out comes Adam Cole, which I called
the lights go out. Yes,
I called it
did.
At that point.
You did, but I thought it was going to be Daniel Bryan because everybody in the crowd was chanting yes, and then he goes, no. And then when Adam Cole comes out, he's like, oh, no, actually right before that, he goes, you thought somebody was going to come out, you know, and then the lights go out, Adam Cole comes out, and then he's like, you know, you think, you know, maybe he's going to, you know, turn on...
I knew that,
but they were teasing it. Yeah. And somebody even said, you know, all of a sudden you just, if you really pay attention, you see Jungle Boy get up and just shift his feet to the left a little bit to perfectly take that super kick.
Yep. You know? You could see it. You could definitely see it.
Yeah.
So then he sits there and they do a story time with Adam Cole, baby.
And he literally only says a sentence though. This is what I felt was the flattest debut of the night. Actually, I think it was overshadowed by Daniel Bryan. I felt like they shouldn't have done this.
But this is why we'll sit there and leave it at Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson making his debut. But
sorry,
this is what wind up getting
Daniel
me
Bryan for so many years.
This is why I said it the first time last week. They needed to take that, and honestly, they should have put Adam Cole coming in and taking care of whatever with the Young Bucks Lucha Bros then at that point.
That's what I was saying.
But that's what I said the other day, was they needed to split it. Either Daniel Bryan make a very his debut, and then go on to Adam Cole costing Christian the match, or Adam Cole needed to cost the Lucha Bros the match and then have Daniel Bryan come to feud at the end.
Here's a third quick scenario that could have also happened that I thought would have played better and I would have been okay with, was Daniel Bryan coming out first to sort of face-to-face square off with Kenny Omega, and then Adam Cole attack him from behind and debut that way.
No,
because that's the way he debuted. That's the way he debuted for NXT. That's the way I thought he was going to debut. Also, love the music because it's literally like his Undisputed Era music, almost just like with words.
Yeah,
which was his best theme in my opinion. So I'm happy to hear him have a new theme song where it still kind of sounds like "What up?"
All right. Yeah. That ends our show for the day. We are definitely looking forward to seeing AEW Dynamite this week. So join us later on, and we will be bringing you NXT AEW shows later on this week. For now, I am author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin D. Francisco. And join us next time Thursday. And find out. Yep, Thursday, and find out what's on tap.